Greetings to listeners all around the world. Welcome to Safe Dividend Investing's podcast number 129 on August 17th of 2023. My name is Ian Duncan MacDonald. In today's podcast, I'll be answering three interesting investment questions. The objective of my books, my website, and my podcasts are to show all those seeking financial independence how to become informed, confident, successful, self-directed investors. Question number one. Can you make money investing in penny stocks? A penny stock is just a stock whose share price is low. There are financially strong penny stocks and financially weak penny stocks. Some penny stocks are financially well enough off to pay dividends. I would like to illustrate this by using some examples from my sixth investment book, which will soon be released. This time, it's on Canadian stocks paying a dividend yield percent of 3.5% or more traded on the Toronto Stock Exchange. My last book was similar, but in stocks traded on the New York Stock Exchange. Of the 215 stocks that qualified for inclusion in the book, 45 could be purchased for under $5. This would be in Canadian dollars. If you were to purchase them with US dollars, you'd be buying them at a 30% discount. One definition of a penny stock I have seen was a stock that could be purchased for less than $5 a share. The highest price of these 45 stocks was Premium Income Corporation, stock symbol PIC.A. At the time I compiled this data in 2023, it cost $4.95 a share and was paying a dividend yield percent of 16.42% and had an operating margin of 70.34%. All 215 stocks are scored. This stock had a score of 37. I personally avoid stocks scoring under 50. Out of the thousands of US and Canadian stocks I have scored, the highest score I've ever calculated was a 78. The lowest was an 8. The lowest price of these 45 stocks was Zoomer Media Limited, stock symbol ZUM. It could be purchased for 4 cents a share. It was paying a dividend of 6.67% and had an operating margin of 4.07%. It had a score of 31. That the shares could be bought for 4 cents surprised me, because I'm quite familiar with the company. It is a viable business. I've attended events at their studios where their television programs originate. I've listened to their radio station, and I've read their magazine called The Zoomer. A well-known, successful Toronto entrepreneur, Moses Zimmer, is the powerhouse behind Zoomer Media. They have found a niche market. Until I came across it in my research, I had no idea it was a public company. The interesting question is, why did Zoomer Media only have a score of 31? The share price scored 1 point out of a possible 10 points because it was so low. The historic share price 4 years ago was also 4 cents and only earned 1 point. However, when the current and historical year were compared, this earned it 6 points. The stock's book value was 20 cents and only earned 1 point. However, the current share price to the book value comparison scored 10 points out of a possible 10. Of course, no one analyzing a 4-cent stock, so in that category, it earned 0 points. The dividend yield of 6.67% earned 8 points. It was trading 33,000 shares daily, which earned it 2 points. The other items in the score were single points. What is interesting is comparing Zoomer Media with the more costly and higher scoring Premium Income Corporation. The higher stock price of $4.95 earned it 3 points versus the 1 point for the 4-cent Zoomer Media stock. While Premium is 16.42% dividend yield was much higher, it only earned 2 points versus the 8 points for the 4-cent stock. The scoring system regards stocks paying over 10.50% as usually lacking credibility and drops the score down. When I look at the full data page in the book for Premium Income, I can see it as being paying out a dividend of between 20 cents and 27 cents since 1999, except after the market crash of 2008, when it dropped down to 14 cents a share, and during the 2020 market crash, when it dropped down to 10 cents a share. It is no surprise then that those market crashes also impacted the share price. In 2020, the share price fell to $3.54, and in 2008, it fell to $4.15. If you had bought Premium Income in 1999 for its then share price of $16.25 and sold it in 2020 at its share price of $3.54, you would have lost about 80% of your investment. However, if you had bought it in the crash of 2020, you would now have come close to doubling your money. Within the 45 penny stocks appearing in the book, there were 4 penny stocks that scored over 50 points. This allows them to compete for attention with most high dividend stocks that can be purchased for more than $5. The 4 were, with a score of 51, was Melcor Real Estate Investment Trust, stock symbol MR.UN, at $4.70 a share, paying a dividend of 10.21% with an operating margin of 53.12%. Also with a score of 51 was European Residential Real Estate Investment Trust, stock symbol ERE.UN, at $2.97 per share with a dividend of 5.92%, an operating margin of 58.07%. With a higher score of 55 was Pipestone Energy Corporation, stock symbol PIPE, at $2.27 a share, paying a dividend of 5.29% with an operating margin of 48.59%. And finally, with a score of 52, was In Play Oil Corporation, stock symbol IPO, at $2.45 a share, paying a dividend of 7.35% with an operating margin of 42.65%. I find it interesting that these 4 inexpensive stocks have higher operating margins than most blue chip companies, who often have operating margins of less than 20%. A high operating margin is a sign of a well-managed company that knows how to grow revenues and control expenses. If I were investing $100,000, would I prefer to buy 1,000 shares of one stock costing $100 a share and paying a dividend of 1.5%, which would be typical of blue chip stocks? Or would I prefer to invest equally in 20 financially strong, higher scoring stocks paying dividends over 5% at prices under $20 per share? I know from having scored thousands of stocks that my chances of doubling the $100,000 to $200,000 are much more likely with lower price stocks. I also know that divesting equally in a portfolio of 20 stocks ensures that a loss in any one of the carefully chosen stocks would be inconsequential, where a loss in a portfolio containing one highly priced stock would be devastating. Do not automatically rule out all penny stocks as being speculative and a poor investment. Some are well worth including in your portfolio. Question number two. What questions should I ask a financial advisor before giving them control of my assets? A financial advisor who is actually the president of his investment company lost $300,000 of my life savings over 3 years. He had decades of experience, had all the credentials, and all the toys of the wealthy. This even included owning a private resort on an island where he wined and dined his clients, including me. He was supposedly a friend and the only friend I knew who had professional experience in investing. Obviously, when I received a very large sum of money to invest, he was the first person I approached to grow my wealth and protect my assets. What should I have asked him before I gave him control of my money? Thanks to him, I now know what to ask, because 20 years ago, I took back what was left of my money and became a successful, self-directed investor. I have learned that many, perhaps most, investment advisors are fundamentally lazy. They are also no smarter than you or I. They want to sell you, yes, never lose sight of the fact that they are salesmen. Their job is to sell you and transferring as much of your money from your pocket to their pocket. They sell what is easiest and most lucrative for them. In most cases, they will want you to invest all your money in a fund of one sort or another. Within 15 minutes, my friend had invested my hundreds of thousands of dollars into a mutual fund of his choosing, while uttering pet phrases about how safe my money would now be, now that it was spread among hundreds of stocks in the fund. All I had to do when I eventually retired was sell off 4% of this ever-growing fund each year to live well until I was 90. Why do they sell funds? Because funds are fuzzy. It is like ad agencies selling the sizzle, not the steak. You really do not have a clue as to what you are investing in. You are buying a concept. If you had your wits about you, you might ask, out of the thousands of funds that are available, why is he promoting this one? The fact he might be getting a much bigger percentage for selling that fund than any other fund every year for the rest of your life would never be admitted to. He will do his best to snow you with jargon and unverifiable facts about how well the fund has performed in the past, without commenting on the reality that the excellent past performance of a fund has little, if anything, to do with how it will do in the future. Often, a fund may contain hundreds of stocks. The seller will selectively refer to its few real winners. These would be well-known, successful companies. You are being sold the sizzle. If you look closely at all the stocks in the fund and scored each of them, you would notice two things. 10 stocks might make up 20 to 50% of the fund's value. Another 100 or more stocks would each represent less than 1% of the fund's value. When you learn to score stocks, you soon recognize that the number of good stocks available is tiny. There are 16,000 North American stocks that you can supposedly buy. Trying to find 40 good ones is difficult, but not impossible. Analyzing all the stocks in the fund is hard work, tedious and futile, because if you purchase that fund as detailed in the fund's prospectus, gave a legal right to change the content of the fund as they choose. You are buying a pig in a poke. All you will know is your money is in a fund, whatever that means. Never buy a fund without going through its prospectus word by word. They're written by clever lawyers for the benefit of mutual fund companies, not the client. Toward the back of the prospectus, you will learn about all the ways the fund can deduct fees, commissions, and charges from the fund. I often wonder, when a client makes a substantial gain from a fund, if the fund company somehow feels cheated. They somehow missed an opportunity to further enrich themselves. The alternative to putting your money into a fund is to invest it yourself as a self-directed investor in carefully chosen individual stocks. Investment advisors are going to be reluctant to recommend stocks because now they, not the fund managers, would be totally responsible for what goes into your portfolio. They want to be able to nibble away on your wealth for the rest of your life. They need to be able to blame any complaints about losses in your portfolio on anyone but themselves. It is convenient to blame fund managers and the swings in the stock market as being at fault. As well, to sit down and carefully select stocks requires some effort. To then explain in detail to you why this stock was chosen opens their choices to arguments which can result in the loss of your business. If an investment advisor is promoting an individual stock, then you have to watch out. Why is that stock being promoted out of the 16,000 that are available? Who is going to make money from that sale? And how much are they going to make? You will not get a straight answer to that question. I learned to trust no decisions but my own when it came to investing. All the information you need to make logical, safe investment decisions is available for free on the internet. Historical records for stocks that go back for decades are instantly accessible. Audited financial information for all publicly traded companies is updated by law every 90 days. Scoring systems exist to help guide you. If you have important questions about taxation, pay a certified accountant to advise you. If there are legal questions, pay a lawyer. Over a lifetime, you will save yourself the hundreds of thousands of dollars that the financial advisor would have been siphoning off. This is money that could have been invested to make money for you. In the first investment book I wrote, Income and Wealth from Self-Directed Investing, I detail the journey of an 80-year-old widow from naive investor being exploited by her investment advisor. She feared outliving her million-dollar portfolio to quickly learning how to build a safe portfolio of financially strong dividend-paying stocks. She not only recovered the hundreds of thousands of dollars her investment advisor had siphoned off, but doubled her annual income. She learned to use scoring software and selectors to identify the best, safest stocks. If she can do it, so can you. Question number 3. Why does your stock scoring software not include corporate debt in its evaluation? In a sense, I do look at corporate debt when you consider that the operating margin percentage and the book value of a stock are used in my scoring software. I also do not include revenue in the scoring matrix for the same reason. The operating margin and the stock's book value both reflect the financial health of a company, including its ability to handle debt. Dividends are paid out of the operating margin and are a sign of financial health and good management. When I see a popular blue chip stock trading for hundreds of dollars, paying a token dividend with a book value of a few dollars, it may be telling me that they are financing their growth by taking on a heavy debt load. When I look back at 24 years of a stock's ever-rising, strong dividend payouts, I think checking a company's debt levels would not be necessary. A company paying a good dividend with a strong operating margin is well managed. I doubt if you can find a company with a high operating margin and a book value close to or above their share price that does not manage its debt well. When I was analyzing business credit risk for Dun & Bradstreet 50 years ago, they thought it was important in making a corporate credit decision to know how old the owner was and whether the owner was married. They also were concerned about the business's housekeeping. Years later, when I was developing a computerized commercial risk scoring system, I only measured such things as how quickly the company paid bills, whether they had recently been placed for collection, whether they had been sued, whether they wrote bad checks, how long they had existed, how many of their suppliers were reporting payment histories on them. The purpose of that score was to determine how quickly I would get paid, or whether I would get paid at all. Such information as the owner's age and marital status were not necessary for such a decision to be made. The stock scoring system is much the same. There are dozens of facts on companies I could have used, but all I wanted to know was, will this stock give me a good dividend income, and will its share price rise over time? Over the many years since the stock scoring software was created, initially for my own use, it has accomplished what I wanted it to accomplish in managing my portfolio. Now that it has existed for so many years, I'm not about to change it because I would not then be able to compare today's score with the scores from previous years. Thanks for listening. If you wish more information on investing and stock scoring, please visit my website, www.saferbetterdividendinvesting.com.